into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No,
videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.
The News Round on Off The Ball.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
This is News Talk.
A very good evening, Will O'Callaghan sitting in for Nathan Murphy on this Thursday. What a show we have ahead. Ireland getting ready to go to Wales in the Six Nations this coming Sunday, hoping to put a run of two successive defeats in the Welsh capital behind them. Former Ireland captain and Ireland's most capped player in the Six Nations, Brian O'Driscoll, will look forward to that match just after 8 p.m. Liverpool at this stage have fallen 7 points behind Manchester City, having played a game more. The two sides meet in our live game and Off The Ball this coming Sunday. We will be talking to both John Giles and Kevin Doyle about where it's gone wrong for the Reds in recent weeks as they suffer back-to-back defeats at Anfield in the Premier League. We'll also be talking to Aileen Gilroy about being at North Melbourne for a second season, their hopes of winning the Women's AFL this campaign. And we'll hear from the League of Ireland managers who shared the silverware between them last season. Stephen Bradley of Shamrock Rovers and Filippo Giovagnoli of Dundalk will be on the football show after 9 p.m. All that to look forward to. We're joined by Neil Tracy. Good evening to you, Neil.
Evening, Will. How are you this evening?
And Joe Malloy is there as well. How are you getting on, Joe?
Evening, gents. How are you doing?
Before we look at the news round, our OTBAM presenters have caused a little bit of a stir in Wales, it would seem, after their comments on Monday, where the Welsh were entirely written off. Ger Gilroy, in this very chair, called them absolutely rubbish and said that Ireland have got a chance to annihilate them this weekend at the Principality Stadium. And Adam Jones, the former Welsh prop, over 100 caps between Wales and the Lions, has hit back this evening in the Irish Examiner. He has said, quote, "I saw some pundit in Ireland saying they would thrash Wales at the weekend. I think that's a bit disrespectful. Actually, it's very disrespectful. Wales were Grand Slam champions 2 years ago. They get to the World Cup semi-finals and still have the majority of the same team. I think it's disrespectful to say we're going to get thrashed by a team which hasn't won a Grand Slam in a while. That sort of thing does piss me off a little bit." Neil Tracy, as our resident rugby head in this conversation, what do you make of Adam Jones having a bit of a chip back at the comments made by Owen and Ger on Monday?
I mean, Ger and Owen, they're getting a lot of credit here. I think for people picking up those comments. Look, I think the way Wales have been over the last year or so since Warren Gatland left, they obviously haven't been doing too well. And in general, it doesn't take much for them to... I don't think the players themselves are sticking it up on the dressing room wall, but the fans, it seems, are willing to stick anything up and take motivation out of absolutely anything. And look, they do always seem to be the... I have experienced this on Twitter. I know a lot of kind of ardent rugby followers will have experienced this on Twitter. Welsh rugby Twitter is the most argumentative and contrary thing out there. You don't see it as much with English rugby followers on Twitter. The Scottish rugby followers on Twitter generally have a brilliant sense of humour at kind of how up and down their team have been and the expectations and the, you know, the crushing blows and the disappointments. The Irish rugby fans probably fall somewhere in between. It's probably a bit more provincial, but it's just something I've always noticed, that the Welsh rugby fans on Twitter are just the most sensitive bunch of people. It's incredible. And like, for that to be making such big news, like, it's not as if Brian O'Driscoll said it or Ronan O'Gara or people who we've had. All due respect to Ger and Owen, but they have not played test rugby. And I think it was pretty clear what they were trying to do, and they have succeeded.
Joe Malloy, I'm not going to try and walk you into trouble as the anchor of Virgin Media's Six Nations coverage here, but are you surprised by the way the Welsh have reacted? Are they being a little bit too sensitive here, the Welsh fans?
I don't know. I just know, Will, tomorrow when I sit down to do the planning for Virgin's coverage, we're now having to clear the decks. The Gilroy-Sheehan effect and what effect that will have on this game is now top of the agenda. And I tell you what, Team Ireland, don't thank them. I mean, there'll be recriminations if Ireland don't win this game all of a sudden.
This is the argument. This is the kind of stuff that ends up on dressing room walls this coming weekend. I'm not sure if it's actually going to be used for any kind of motivation at the Principality. Neil, we'll be talking to Brian Driscoll in a lot more detail about the game later on. I know you've got some speculation around the team news, which will be named tomorrow. But what is your feeling, Neil, about Sunday? And given that Wales have lost 7 out of 10 under Pivac, it's understandable that Ireland will be fairly bullish going into this fixture.
Yeah, I think the fact that Wales have had to suspend Josh Adams for a couple of games is an absolute hammer blow for them, because he was like arguably the most dangerous winger. Now they are going to have Louis Rees-Samit probably coming into the bench, as I'll kind of detail later. They'll be naming their team tomorrow, and they're going to be without Jonathan Davies as well. So, like, on top of the form that they've had last year and the struggles they've had, they're missing key players as well, which is not going to be ideal for them. And look, it was something that was discussed yesterday in the press conferences with both Peter Omani and Johnny Sexton. Ireland's record in Cardiff, in the Six Nations at least, is absolutely brutal. They haven't won there since 2013. I know they've won there in World Cup warm-up matches and in the World Cup itself in the years since. But, you know, in the games against Wales that have actually mattered at the Millennium Stadium over the last while, they really have struggled. One thing that's going to be interesting as well, I think this Sunday, is going to be the pitch, because they've had to bring in a brand new pitch for the game. This is the first game in the stadium since they reopened it after, you know, the Millennium Stadium and the Arms Park was kind of used as a makeshift hospital during the worst months of the pandemic earlier this year. So, like, this pitch has kind of been grown outside the stadium and laid into the stadium. And I think we've all seen across almost any sport that when there is a first-time pitch in action that hasn't really had too much time to bed in and kind of sew itself in, that, you know, there might be a few issues. There could be some players losing their footing. I'm actually looking forward to seeing what impact that's going to have.
Alan Wynne-Jones saying this week he much prefers playing in Cardiff than in Clonakilty, and was somewhat playing down Wales' record last year at home, particularly in the Autumn Nations Cup, because they didn't have the comforts of being at the Principality. The roof will be closed for Sunday afternoon's game as well. We are talking news round here on Off the Ball, but thanks to Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters. Neil, the relentlessness of the Premier League continues. We've got another big game up at 8 o'clock this evening.
Yeah, Will, and a pretty crucial one for both sides. Spurs taking on Chelsea. Spurs looking to end their two-game losing run. Jose Mourinho side welcoming Chelsea to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium for an 8 o'clock kickoff. The team news is in. Jose Mourinho making three changes from the Spurs side that began the 1-0 defeat to Brighton on Sunday. Serge Aurier, Eric Dier and Carlos Vinicius come into the 11, with Joe Rodon, Davinson Sanchez and Gareth Bale all dropping to the bench. Obviously, Harry Kane is still injured again. They start with Lloris, Aurier, Alderweireld, Dier and Davies, Højbjerg and Ndombele and Sissoko in midfield, with Son and Bergwijn supporting Vinicius. Matt Doherty on the bench for Spurs. Just the one change for Thomas Tuchel's side from the Chelsea 11 that began their 2-0 win against Burnley. Reece James comes in with Tammy Abraham among the substitutes, along with Hakim Ziyech, Christian Pulisic and Olivier Giroud. But there's no place in the squad whatsoever for Kai Havertz. Chelsea started with Mendy in goals. They're going with Azpilicueta, Silva and Rudiger. It looks like a three at the back, with Reece James and Callum Hudson-Odoi at wing-backs. Jorginho, Kovacic in midfield with Alonso, Mason Mount and Timo Werner starting up front, with Christensen, Abraham, Chilwell, Ziyech, Kante, Emerson, Pulisic and Giroud all on the bench.
Well, Joe, Matt Doherty is turning into a little bit of a nightmare for him at Spurs. He got a right rollicking from Jose Mourinho, who ended up playing two halves right in front of his manager, because he played left back in the first half against Liverpool and then right back in the second. And players were drifting past him. He didn't get on the ball a whole lot in the opposition half. And now he finds himself on the bench again. I would think this has to be a concern for Ireland coming into March, that Matt Doherty, a player who was in really good form after the restart in the Premier League, is now bang out of form.
Yeah, it is a concern, really. I mean, thankfully, there's Seamus Coleman there, so it's not the crisis that the Shane Duffy situation is. Maybe in Duffy's case, you have Egan and Clark to come in, who are both playing, but Duffy obviously has been a mainstay. And that's a trickier dilemma, I think, for Stephen Kenny. The Doherty thing, you would expect, will sort itself out over time. And it may not be at Spurs, who knows, but it might depend how long Jose is there. Like, Doherty was very open at the start of the season about the difference between playing right wing back and right back. Starting positions are different, defensive responsibilities are different. And he had just such a great run in the team at Wolves. He was full of confidence. He was aggressive. He had total clarity over what he was doing and when. He has none of those things at Spurs. And Jose Mourinho, just ask Luke Shaw, amongst others, is not necessarily the greatest manager in the world to rehabilitate you when he starts to doubt you. And that's the worry. You know, you don't want Doherty to have a season or more under Jose, whereby Jose is picking Aurier and Doherty's confidence is almost systematically run down. And that's putting too strong a point on it. But yeah, it's not ideal. Coleman's playing well, so that kind of negates the urgency to sort this thing out by March. But it's not what Matt Doherty would have planned when he signed for Spurs, that's for sure.
No, especially when Jose signed two attacking wing-backs in Doherty and Reguilón, and both have kind of struggled to keep their place in the team so far. Coming up tomorrow on OTBAM, we've been covering the story around Panorama's screening of Boxing and the Mob, which focused on MTK Global on Monday night. Joe was talking to Neil Richmond and Kieran Cunningham on Tuesday about this. Well, Bernard Dunn is going to be on OTBAM tomorrow morning. He's going to be talking about talent development in boxing, of course, in his role as basically the head of performance in the IABA. And other sports, of course, will also be reacting to the Panorama documentary as well. Here's a taster on what Bernard had to say to Owen Sheehan.
From that standpoint of the young professionals that are operating in Ireland at the moment, I know you haven't seen Monday night's Panorama documentary yet, but Barry McGuigan was one of the big figures who came on to speak about this, and he spoke about how he's losing a lot of fighters to MTK, basically. They're being undercut. Would that concern you if you were a young boxer at the moment, the fact that the options are narrowing with regards to picking your promotion or picking the management team who are going to represent you, that it is narrowing towards MTK all the time?
I think it's hugely important that the powers, that the people who are in power, those who run the World Federations, be it amateur and professional, I think it's important that they set out very clear rules and regulations that protect and safeguard all our young athletes coming through, and our older athletes, the guys who are in professional, and that there's very clear guidance on making sure that what they earn is theirs, making sure that the careers are being well looked after.
How important is it that someone like Barry McGuigan is coming out and talking about this subject and talking about the associations to MTK?
Come here, I think with the Barry situation, I know he went through a recent court case himself. Mm. So like Barry's a phenomenal boxer himself. Actually was a huge inspiration to me. I remember having a photograph with him when I was 5 years of age in a gym in Dublin and saying I wanted to be like him someday and be champion of the world. It took me a little while to get there, but it's I'm a slow learner, let's put it that way. But you know, we've got some great individuals coming through in this country, in terms of athletes, in terms of performances, in terms of ability to become world champions, and we want to make sure that they're being guided in their careers in the right way.
Bernard Dunn, who fought and won a world title in his home city of Dublin. It seems a long way away that we'll have professional boxing, at least on that level in Ireland, 5 years on now this month from the Regency attack. Joe, you were talking to Billy Walsh last week too, and he was saying that it is very important for the IABA to try and get some kind of pathway for these young boxers who, no doubt, if they do well at major championships or at the Olympics, offers are going to come into them. And in some cases, they could seem like transformative money that will be available. But just to give these guys the way of making maybe the right choice with the next stage in their career if they're going to go professional.
Yeah, I mean, money talks, Will. So I'm not sure what you're going to do really is the reality. And it's interesting, listen to Bernard there. I'll listen to the full interview tomorrow. I suspect he plans on watching the Panorama program. It seems like he was doing general media today, so it wasn't like he kind of put himself forward to talk about this issue, more this issue landed on his lap. Fair enough. I mean, I understand if people don't want to come out in the way Barry McGuigan did. It's obviously a difficult situation to talk about. Yeah, look, ultimately, that's what the point you've raised is important, but it's just a bigger issue than that, isn't it? Like, the thing needs to be sorted out now. It seems Donald McRae talked to British Boxing and they effectively said, look, we can't really intervene in who's advising various fighters, nothing we can do, and there doesn't seem to be anything anyone in boxing can do or anything in boxing that they're prepared to do. So like it's a bleak enough picture at the moment. It seems in the short term, it will fall upon the broadcasters to really take a stand, and they can't claim ignorance anymore, not in light of the program this week. Will they take a stand? I'd be surprised. I think last summer we got a statement from Daniel Kinahan saying he was stepping away from the sport, and that was taken at face value, and I suspect it'll be taken at face value again if required. There's too much money at stake. So I don't know, like when you say a path for young Irish fighters, if they want to turn professional and MTK are offering them the most money and the best terms, like what path would you be suggesting really?
Mm. And in some cases, MTK is where they're going to be steered by many of their coaches currently too. And in reality, it's probably the only major representation, unless you go with Barry McGuigan, that you can have on this island as well. And there's the possibility of fighting in Ireland, albeit in Belfast, if they sign with MTK Global. I'm a bit of a cynic like you. I think once the TV contracts come round for Tyson Fury against Anthony Joshua, ESPN and Sky, who've been extremely quiet this week, will be more than happy to sign that and sell people the pay-per-view for 40 quid a shot for that fight later this year. Neil, we're going to golf next, and Rory McIlroy has been talking about the potential changes around driving distances.
Yeah, but first, he's in action at the moment on day one of the Waste Management Phoenix Open, and he's flown back up the leaderboard after a pretty disastrous start. He's 2 under at the moment through 16 holes. He's playing the 17th right now, having started double bogey, bogey. So he was 3 over par after his opening 2 holes. But he's now back within 6 of the lead, which is held by American Matthew Naismith. McIlroy's up to 2 under par at the moment. Naismith is 8 under, 3 clear of Tom Hoge in second, while Padraig Harrington is playing the second at the moment. He's level par. But on those comments from earlier, McIlroy has accused golf's rulemakers of reeking of self-importance. They've announced plans to try limit how far players can hit the ball off the tee. And McIlroy says it's going to have a negative impact on the sport, particularly for amateurs.
I feel the RNA and the USGA are looking at golf through a tiny, narrow little lens that pertains to 0.1% of golfers. Yes, of course the ball goes a long way with top-level professionals and top-level amateurs and the guys that sort of make their living playing this game, but 99.9% of golfers don't do that. And they don't want the ball to go shorter. They need help getting the ball in the air for going further. I mean, golf has had an unbelievable boom in 2020. I mean, it's been like, this pandemic has been so good for golf. And the fact that they're looking at the wrong thing, they spent millions of dollars doing this distance insights report, which I think is, it's not going to change the game at all. You know, they might put new regulations on manufacturers. Manufacturers are going to find a way to get around them. That's how good they are. So those millions of dollars that were spent in the distance insights report should have been put back into the grassroots of the game, because golf is experiencing a boom. So we need more younger people in the game. We need more minorities in the game. That's how we keep the game going for the next 100 years, not by looking at the ball and looking at the driver.
Joe Molloy, with your Golf Weekly hat on, what's your reaction to Rory's comments there? Bearing in mind, Rory is the second longest off the tee in the PGA Tour.
I mean, he was fairly pent up, wasn't he? Mm-hmm. That was the thing that jumped out the most. Everyone was like, geez, look how fired up he is. And it was kind of funny in the clip after he finished speaking, the cameras were still rolling and someone said, geez, you're fairly fired up. And he said, yeah, I woke up in a mood today and I'm just rolling with it, which we can all empathize with. I mean, I think ultimately he's right in many ways. The average amateur needs all the help they can get. Golf's unbelievably difficult sport. So I suspect, and I think he advocates it as well, we're heading probably with golf for a situation whereby bifurcation is the rather fancy word they use for it, whereby the professionals and the amateurs are playing with different equipment. So there'll be some kind of halt put on the better golfers, the professionals rather, and the amateurs. We will get all the forgiveness that we can possibly attract. The best, the easiest ball to hit, the easiest clubs to hit, and we'll still find golf way too hard. As for your point, you know, a degree of cynicism there, Will, you know, Rory second longest off the tee, geez, he wouldn't want to have the equipment changed. There is an argument out there from those in the know who can explain the science better than me, that actually if they were to roll back in the equipment and change the equipment, that Rory's talent over the others would be just as drastic, that actually, you know, his accuracy and the ability to time his swing so wonderfully, you know, he'd be just fine, and it wouldn't diminish the gap with him. And apparently, like, a big chunk of guys in the middle who are you know, benefiting almost the most from technology. Like Greg Norman in his day was by a distance, you know, an unbelievable driver, generational driver. Whereas, like, he mightn't be rewarded for that now the way he was back in his day, because the equipment is so good for everyone.
Yeah, there's a lot of players coming out, as Porter Carrington has said in this show, who are now swinging faster than a generation before, and there's going to be a whole succession of big hitters that are going to come on tour, equipment or no equipment, in the future. Now, every night this week, we've been giving away a six-month Now TV Sky Sports Pass as part of our Super Bowl build-up. At the end of this week, we'll have our Super Bowl preview special. That's at midday tomorrow on our social channels here at Off The Ball. But to be in with a chance of winning that six-month Sky Sports Pass tonight, all you have to do is identify our mystery voice who wanted us to pass this on to Tom Brady and the Buccaneers.
I have nothing but absolute respect for them.
That's extremely easy. I don't think we even need a replay on one tonight. Text your name and the answer to that mystery voice to 53106. It'll cost you 30 cents. We'll contact the winner after the show. It's all with thanks to Now TV. You can catch all the Super Bowl preview shows and the game itself on Sunday with a Now TV Sky Sports Pass. We're going back to football, Neil, next, and we could well have neutral ground for Liverpool against Leipzig.
Oh, I think we certainly will have a neutral ground for that game. Well, the away leg of Liverpool's Champions League last 16 tie with Leipzig isn't going to be allowed to take place in Germany this month. The country has banned people from entering who are travelling from areas affected by coronavirus mutations, which obviously includes the UK, and there will be no special allowance made for the Premier League title holders. And UEFA say they're working on a solution for the game to be played outside of Germany. Early speculation this morning was that it could actually be played at Wembley.
The League of Ireland are big creditors for Bank of Ireland, and Bank of Ireland have now taken a sponsorship up with both the League of Ireland itself and also with the Women's National League.
Yeah, and the government also are going to be providing additional support to the League of Ireland, which is according to Minister of State for Sport, Jack Chambers. He tweeted this evening saying he had a positive meeting with the FAI to discuss the return of football in Ireland. The FAI unveiled a €3.6 million package to clubs in recent days, with the league set to get underway on the 19th of March. Meanwhile, Australian Open organisers are confident that the first Grand Slam of the year will go ahead as planned on Monday. That's despite 160 players still waiting for the results of coronavirus tests. More than 500 people connected with the tournament were told to isolate by Melbourne health officials yesterday after a hotel worker tested positive. Play at six warm-up events and the draws were postponed today. So the draw is going to take place tomorrow, and players will be allowed out of isolation once they return a negative test.
The Welsh and Irish teams will be named for Sunday tomorrow lunchtime, but we're getting a bit of a hint as to how the Welsh 15 might be shaping up.
Yeah, Wales head coach Wayne Pivac has hinted that 20-year-old Louis Rees-Zammit is set to play on the wing for Wales against Ireland in the Six Nations on Sunday. Cardiff's Josh Adams was suspended for two matches for a breach of their coronavirus protocols. Jonathan Davies is expected to miss out through injury, so George North is likely to start in the centre. And as you said, both of those teams will be named tomorrow. Meanwhile, Scotland have given Cameron Redpath his test debut for Saturday's Six Nations opener against England at Twickenham. The Bath centre is the son of former Scotland captain Brian Redpath, but he played at under 20 level for England and has now chosen to represent the Scots at test level. His former underage teammate and centre partner on that England under 20 team, Ollie Lawrence, is actually going to be making his Six Nations debut in the English midfield, with Johnny Hill partnering Maro Itoje in the second row. But speaking today, Scotland head coach Gregor Townsend said he's confident that the 21-year-old Redpath will handle the pressure of the occasion.
I've been really impressed with him in games where maybe away from home or up against it, he's had that same fearless mindset of wanting to take on the opposition. He's a fierce competitor too, and he'll have a big role to play in defence. But we also see his skills in attack. We think it's the right time for him.
Neil, we've got the Connacht team named as well.
Yeah, Jack Harty and Finlay Beelan will both make their 150th Connacht appearances in the Guinness Pro 14 tomorrow evening. They're taking on the Dragons. Second row Gavin Thornbury will feature for the province for the 50th time, as will Paul Boyle, who's going to captain the side from blindside flanker, while Quaylen Blade and Jack Harty will form a new look halfback partnership, and Matt Healy comes in on the wing in place of Alex Wooten, who drops to the bench.
We've had at least 6 months of Yashira Mori giving comments, and usually when we report them on the news round, it's to say, yeah, the Tokyo Olympics are going to go ahead. He's got himself into a bit of trouble with some comments he's made overnight.
He has, yeah. The Tokyo 2020 president, Yoshiro Mori, says he won't resign despite pressure to stand down after he made sexist comments. The 83-year-old is reported to have said that women talk too much in their meetings during an online session of the Japanese Olympic Committee Board of Directors. He has apologised for making the remarks, but he says he won't be resigning from the position.
Arsenal really need to get someone better in terms of their board to be making the appeals to the FA. We had two red cards that were kind of similar this week. Southampton and Bednarek look like they're going to get away with it and get theirs overturned, but David Luiz will be serving a ban for his controversial red card against Wolves midweek.
Yeah, it's a strange one. Mixed appeal results for Arsenal and Southampton for pretty similar fouls. So Arsenal's appeal against the red card for David Luiz in Tuesday's Premier League defeat to Wolves was unsuccessful. He was sent off just before half-time for clipping the heel of Willian Jose and conceding a penalty. Arsenal say they accept the FA's decision and Luiz will now be serving a one-game ban. But within minutes of that, Southampton successfully appealed the red card shown to Jan Bednarek in Tuesday's 9-0 thrashing against Manchester United. The defender was dismissed after conceding a penalty for a foul on Anthony Martial, but the contact appeared to be minimal and he'll now be available for Saturday's trip to Newcastle. I think what might have clinched it for Bednarek was, after the game, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer admitting he didn't think that it was a red card. That might have just tipped things in the balance of him when it came to the appeals and why it was different to David Luiz, perhaps.
Yeah, surprised the VAR actually gave the penalty. It was a very long consultation ahead of that. Southampton were already, 7-0 down at the time when it happened as well. There wasn't a huge amount of mercy during it. The final story, Neil, that we're going to have a look at here is golf again. And not the best day for the Irish in Saudi Arabia today.
Yeah, so Shane Lowry, Graham McDowell and Cormac Sharvin, they're all level par after day one of the Saudi International on the European Tour, but they're 9 off the lead, which is held by England's David Horsey. And elsewhere for Ireland, then Paul Dunn is 3 over par after he shot an opening day 73.
Neil Tracy, Joe Malloy, many thanks for joining us on the News Round. Text in to 53106 about Ger Gilroy. If we lose on Sunday, Ger Gilroy will be public enemy number one. Expect wanted posters of him and his handlebar moustache to pop up at locations across Ireland. Coming in from Paddy. He's already got the moustache in place for the posters. They don't even have to be photoshopped on. We'll take a short break. When we come back, we're talking football with Johnny Giles.
The News Round on Off The Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.